Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
9 minutes after 7 p.m. this evening, it being the 11th of October 2022. Thank you so much for joining us. For those of you who have been with us since the last hour, right? It is a Business Sense right here on AWR. My name is Thapelo Moloi. And of course, you and I, best of buddies, till 8 p.m. this evening. We are into our second and final hour of the show. It being a Tuesday, as you might know, every Tuesday we talk about the business of technology. Well, precisely because we'd love to argue that our lives and livelihoods are shaped by technology in some sort of way, right? From religion, right? And we are in a Christian radio station, and of course, enabled by technology, you and I are able to have these conversations. We are able to interact with each other. We are able to talk to each other, and we are able to, you know, hear me, and also you can also talk to me. And so technology is affecting even religion, and how we are also now suppose COVID has done that, right? Suppose COVID has done that. We are now looking at ways in which we can spread the word, right? And technology is one of the ways that we have been heavily relying upon over the last 2 years. I mean, I know we all want to forget those 2 years, but nonetheless, so from religion to social, of course, to career, to business, every aspect of our lives is affected by technology. Now, this one is very important for me also because in this space where I certainly have the privilege of here and there working on the mining space, find that the mining space is also changing. The fact that the way they are doing mining these days is changing. No more just using miners. They are now looking at drones. They are now looking at all these different technology that they need to use. They are now upgrading their systems, and they are now also upgrading and finding new and better ways of doing things. It sounds like there's a bit of programming in there. And coding, and for the robots to work in the mines. By the way, yeah, my robots are now going to be mining in the next couple of years. But Asikolapo, we'll talk about that some other day. But, you know, coding then enables us, I suppose, and programming to be able to do that. So today we want to look at how does that affect our lives? Not only just what programming is, because I think that's an important topic to talk about. But yes, we also need to then talk about the other important topic, which is how does that then affect our lives? And this evening I've got Ubuntu Zuki, who's going to be help us to understand this a little bit better and how our lives are going to be changed by that. Am I correct, Butzuki, to say that somehow even the robots are now going to be mining in the next coming few years?
Hi, Tabela, and also greetings to your listeners. Hey, look, I think, actually, I don't even know why I'm here, because your introduction is so powerful in actually stating that software development or software engineering encompasses pretty much, in fact, I cannot think of a single area or industry or area of our lives that isn't one way or another touched by software engineering. And definitely, I'm certain, though I'm not, I do not have that much knowledge in terms of like the mining industry. I can say almost with a high degree of certainty that not in the future, but today there's a lot of software engineering that is already involved in mining. Because effectively, every time there's any form of automation, which some of the mining processes do have some form of automation, then there definitely is some software engineering there. So you definitely are right.
Sure. I guess I just put the cat amongst the pigeons right there and kind of flipped the script a little bit, and the producer's looking at me like, what are you doing? But I think, you know, it's something that's been in my mind and something that's really affecting me in a way, because, I mean, of course, I'm not a technical person in this space, but I see this every single day, and I thought this is a conversation that we certainly want to have with you. And of course, good evening. We thank you so much for taking the time that you've taken to join us and talk to us a little bit from a technical point of view around this and how it affects our lives. But let's lay the ground a little bit. For those of our listeners who don't know Ubuntu, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And again, I will concede a bit of a disclaimer. It's a very difficult question. You know, when you say, Ubani, who are you? And a lot of us struggle with that. I'm one of those that do struggle with that. But I think for the proper context, for people who are listening, Ubuntu, Ubani.
Yes. So my full name, names are Zukisani Zamela. I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Yeah.
I was born in East London, grew in Butterworth, high school at Sparta, and then moved to Cape Town to study electrical and computer engineering.
Yeah.
And then I continued staying this side and now work as a software developer. That's what my trade is.
Yeah.
And then I'm also I'm a husband of one wife.
Yeah, very important.
Yes, father of one child so far.
Yeah.
And then what else? I'm a Seventh Day Adventist.
Yeah.
Of course, currently serving as the communications director at my local church.
Yeah.
I do work with give a helping hand. Let me put it that way. At the conference level, in a few capacities. And then what else? Yeah, I think that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Beautiful, beautiful. So for people who don't know Butterworth, so I will consider, I also don't know, I haven't been there. The only place I've been there, right? And that's how far I've been to the Eastern Cape, and I would really love to explore quite a lot. But for someone who's listening from somewhere in Malawi, for instance, and thinking Butterworth, can you tell us a little bit about that place?
Butterworth is basically a smallish town. Especially if you compare it with the metros like Cape Town and Johannesburg.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly small town. So I'd imagine a person would probably, maybe if they have any familiarity with the Eastern Cape, they should know the coastal city of East London.
Yeah.
And then there's another big-ish city, Mthatha, that is kind of like close to where Nelson Mandela was from.
Yeah.
So Butterworth is pretty much somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And Gqeberha, apparently, you know, that's one of the places that everyone knows.
Yes. So Gqeberha is, if you are moving from the south and moving further up the coast, you'd be starting at Gqeberha. And then past East London. Butterworth, and then Abuja, which you mentioned, then Mthatha, and then continue all the way up to Durban.
I see that stretch there that you're referring to. Okay. So would you say your background growing up in Butterworth has had some sort of influence in perhaps the person that you are today?
I mean, definitely, which I suppose I probably could say that that's not something that's necessarily unique to me, but in terms of like your background, influence, and who you are. But I wouldn't necessarily say specifically being in Butterworth. There isn't a specific thing that I can point to about the hometown itself, but generally the way in which I was raised, and my background, it influenced or continues to influence the person that I am today.
That's beautiful. And meeting the Lord, how has that also influenced you?
Sorry, come again?
Meeting the Lord, how has that also shaped the person that you are?
Oh, I am very, very thankful for that. In fact, also in terms of like the timing, I often say that I'm very, very happy that I was introduced to the Lord and embraced the gospel, in particular through the lenses of Adventism.
Okay.
I'll put it that way. At the stage and age at which I was introduced, because this was back in 2007 when I was 21 at the time. Because I always say that, you know, sometimes when you find yourself, you know, getting older, and especially once you get access to things like money and all of those things, before you meet the Lord, with money there's more access, and then you can find yourself, being up to a lot of mischief.
Yes.
So being introduced at a fairly early age before you come to means and all of those things, it shelters you from a lot of things. I'd put it that way.
Yeah.
So definitely. It has had a significant influence over my life.
Sure, that's beautiful. Yeah, I think I agree. You know, when the moment you get your first paycheck, the world is your oyster, and all of a sudden, your attitude changes, the way you look at things, and the way you look at people also changes. Now you think, as in, I'm better than so and so, and I think that's a downward trip, right? Which you will need certainly the Lord to take you back from. So, because money has a way to change people, you know, someone because now that they are working, all of a sudden they become a different person that we don't know. But yeah, we'll talk about that some other time. Now let's get into this one as well, which is our focus for today. When we are talking software engineering, for people like me who are not technical in this space, what are we talking about?
So software engineering, right, is the discipline involved in designing, creating, testing, and maintaining software.
Okay.
And then the follow-up question to that is, okay, so what is software then?
Yeah.
and software, basically, it's anything that falls within the category of things like, for example, websites.
Okay.
So anytime you take your phone or your computer and you go and visit a website, the website itself can be considered as software.
Okay.
And then more especially web applications. Now, web applications is similar to a website, but one that you are able to interact with.
Mm.
So post a comment, or like, for example, Facebook.
Yeah.
When you go to a Facebook website, that's like a web application.
Mm.
So that's software.
Mm.
Mobile applications, including your social media applications, the calculator on your phone, all of the apps, basically on your mobile devices, all of the apps on your desktop devices, so Excel, Word, Paint application, that software. And then also the sort of like other, now I'd say, electronic devices. Let's say, for example, modern cars, especially when you're talking EVs or electronic vehicles, but not even that. Most modern cars, they will have some software to one extent or another running on them. And then what else can I think of? Yeah, pretty much anything that I'd say is electronic and has some sort of like either automation, even your microwave, for example, whether you're able to set a timer and then it's able to run, it will have to some degree some software running on it. So as you can see, software engineering encompasses all of these things that the average person who at the very least has access to, let's say, a smartphone or a computer, all of those things that you use, all of that is software, basically.
Sure.
So then software engineering, as said in the beginning, is then the discipline of designing, creating, testing, and maintaining software.
Now, what attracted you to this field?
Actually, when I went to university, cutting a long story short, I initially applied for electrical engineering because I didn't know that much about software engineering.
Yeah.
But then a very close friend of mine, I noticed, who are coming from the same school as me, we matriculated at the same time, I noticed when we were like, getting there, registering, I was like, hey, what is this thing that you registered for? Electrical and computer engineering. And I was like, that sounds very nice.
Yeah.
it sounds like a deep thing.
Yes.
So I was like, hey, I want to keep that one. And pretty much that's how I got into it.
That's very interesting.
It's not so much. There wasn't like a lot of in-depth initially.
Yeah.
But then what kept me in it, for example, as I said, I'm actually trained both in electrical and computer engineering. But the thing that kept me more on the software side of things is the ease of access. So, for example, any person today who has a computer and access to the internet, they can pretty much start learning programming and start actually creating software. So I was like, hey, I like this thing because I can start creating things, see it in action in front of me in relatively short amount of time compared to other like engineering disciplines, for example. And I love that. And I was, not being a money person, I was like, hey, this is a nice thing that doesn't have a high barrier of entry. In other words, I don't need a lot of money in order for me to start training myself and getting into it. So
yeah.
That's what caused me to, I'd say, fall more deeper in love with it, despite my shall we say, shallow reason for entering into it.
I think those reasons were godly led, and God was like, no, you're not going to that. And I'm asking this question because it sounds like it's one of those courses that you only find out when you get to varsity. But we are never told. I don't know. But I find that young people today have access to more information, and as such, they even know about these things before they even get to university. Whereas some of us, we had to learn about, oh, there's this thing, call this thing, when you get to varsity, because I suppose the resources that our schools where we come from, they didn't have those resources, and so we weren't guided into knowing what. Actually, there's a lot of courses there. Some of them you can't even pronounce the name, but it is a course at the end of the day. And so that's where my question was coming from. Now, I know that a lot of us, for instance, but maybe this time, these days, it's becoming a little bit better. But a lot of us, we buy a phone and we say, "Hey, these are features. Are they features or they are software? Are we using it incorrectly?" The wording.
So a feature, okay, software is, as I have already sort of like explained, in terms of let's think about it with specifically within the context of cell phones, for simplicity's sake.
Yes.
So any application that you open, you click on an app, whether it's a game, social media, whatever, that's software. Or say it's a software application, right? Then whatever small detail or small thing that you can do, let's say, for example, in Facebook, right?
Yeah.
You log in, you open the Facebook app.
Yeah.
When you're on Facebook, you are able to create a post.
Yeah.
You are able to comment on someone else's post.
Mm-hmm.
You are able to react to it. You choose to just like, but then they added more things that you are able to do. Either you are laughing or you are angry at comment and so forth. So all of those small things that you are able to do on those applications are features.
So you are
using it right when you say, for example, let's say you open Facebook and then all of a sudden there's a new button that when you click that,
yes,
certain thing that was not there yesterday, that's a new feature of the Facebook application in our example.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. That's beautiful. That makes sense. Okay. Can we then break down just in a very easy, uncomplicated way, what is the intelligence behind that makes it easy or possible that when I click this, it does this? When I click on the Facebook app, it opens. What is that thing that makes it for the software or a mobile application to respond to me?
I'm trying to see how I hope I'm understanding you. Just turn in the right direction if I'm not understanding you well. So the traditional software, right? Traditional computers are actually very stupid.
Okay.
Put it that way. So everything that you effectively see happening when you click, from simple things to things that seem to be fairly complicated, a human being, which we call programmers or software engineers or software developers. All these terms for simplicities are one and the same thing. A software developer sits down and they have to actually code. We call it coding. That is when you are writing instructions.
Yeah.
That's what you actually do when you are creating software.
Mm.
You write a program, which is simply instructions that a computer can be able to understand.
Okay.
So you have to say, first of all, you have to say, I want for there to be a button in this particular position.
Mm.
So the programmer writes that.
Mm.
And then on top of that, you then say, okay, when this button is clicked, I want this or that action to happen. And so on and so forth. So each and every instruction, continuing with the Facebook example. So whether it's the reaction or it's the comment, the text field where you type your comment and then press that submit button and all of those things. Someone has sitting down and has written a piece of code that says that if this action takes place, then this should happen. If this should happen. When a person is visiting another person's comment, if they are not a friend and the person has set the feature to not allow people who are not friends to comment, then this button should be hidden. All of those things, they are written by programmers. A computer doesn't know anything. You have to tell it what what it does.
Mm.
But to kind of like throw maybe a spanner as my last point on this particular point, a spanner in the works.
Mm.
That is, you'll note when I started, I said that is traditional programming.
Okay.
Which is what most software developers around the world do. They then the sort of like the next evolution of programming, which I'm certain you've probably heard, that's called machine learning or artificial intelligence.
Yes.
That one is significantly more complex because you find that these are basically programs that are also initially written by people, but then they are written in such a way that they can be left alone and then they can learn on their own by consuming information and then be able to do more advanced tasks without being explicitly told by a person, which is basically the field of artificial intelligence. That's about it in a nutshell. But most things that you come across, that is to say, you clicking on a button, this happening, or you scrolling and this popping up, whatever this may be, most of those will fall under the field of what I would call a traditional programming, the software development.
Yeah. The latter one, artificial intelligence and machine learning, sounds very scary. I don't know, but in my mind, as I think about it, this thing can learn to do things on its own over time, and it's scary. But maybe that's what we need to explore in the next conversation again when you talk about this, because it sounds as much as I say it as it's scary, but it sounds very interesting.
It's literally both, actually. And anyone who you are to an extent right to be scared because people are far more intelligent than me, like the likes of Elon Musk, for example, the founder of Tesla and SpaceX and all of these things. They are very wary of us continuing work in artificial intelligence without it being well checked. In other words, there are a couple of calls in the industry or people who are into these things or involved in the development of these things to say we have to be extremely careful as we go about it because if we do not, movies like your Terminator, for example, may end up being not too far-fetched if we are not extremely careful about how we go about developing AI, basically.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure.
It's good to have a healthy amount of, let's say, concern over the directive or be observant of what happens as far as machine learning and artificial intelligence is concerned.
Sure. I love that point. Be observant as much as, we are observant about other things. This is one of the things that we should be observant. What are the skills required if one wants to join this field?
So I'll speak both from an academic perspective. So that is to say a person who is going through high school and then will go to university or tertiary and so on. And then I'll speak in the general sense. Because believe it or not, there's a lot of people who end up being software developers and earning a lot of money without having necessarily went through the traditional schooling. Route. So as a student, so let's say you are in high school, the field that you want to take up, if you're interested in computer science, is basically your sciences, in particular maths, not just math, not math lit, what is it called, pure math?
Pure math, yeah.
And physics.
Okay.
And if you are privileged to, of course, naturally, if you are privileged to be going to a school that offers computer science as a subject, then pick that up. So those are the subjects that I'd say that you need to ensure that are you basically leaning towards the sciences, especially math, second to that physics. And you can pick up other things like your chemistry, for example. It can't help. It would further sharpen your mind in terms of like logical thinking that is required for software development. And then now for a person who let's say is not necessarily, let's say you're sitting at home, you are not doing anything, you have a year in front of you, and you'd like to pick up programming, there's a lot of free resources that you can explore online. For example, YouTube. With YouTube alone, that's why I said if you have a computer and access to the internet, with just YouTube and a bit of Googling, you can probably pretty much, I often argue, this is what I often say when I challenge people, typically at the beginning of the year, I say, look, if you are not doing anything and you're looking for something to do, if you were to dedicate yourself and just go on YouTube and dedicate, let's say, at least an hour each day of the week, let's say, within a space of about a year, you could learn enough programming that would allow you to probably apply for an internship in a company. So that's what I'd say. With the access of information that is available online, for free in particular, the other courses that you could pay for, you can be able to pick up programming. So that's what I'd say in a nutshell.
Sure. So don't be lazy sitting at home and saying there's nothing I can do when you've got a smartphone in front of you. Instead of using it for other things, you could use it basically to pick up a very important skill for the future.
Exactly. In fact, to speak to that point, though I emphasize on a laptop, because if you're going to program a laptop or a computer, it's best to be using a computer because you need a wider screen. But with that being said, there are actually applications like apps that you can download from the App Store that can allow you to start programming. So in the absence of a computer, if you have a smartphone and you really would like to start trying it out, a smartphone is enough for you to start playing around. I actually know a kid. He's currently a young man, actually, maybe I should say. Some may take offense. I'm being an ageist. he's studying at UCT now, and I remember he had shared with me that in his high school year, during that break before going to university, he didn't have access to a computer, and he would use his phone to sharpen his programming skills. So I do know that it's actually something that you can do. So yeah. If you have a smartphone and access to the internet, then you do not have an excuse.
Sure, you don't have an excuse. Take us through a typical day in the office.
So a typical day in an office as a software developer. So you typically get in the morning and probably have a morning meeting you often hear being called daily stand-ups.
Okay.
They're called stand-ups because if it's physical, it's different now in the age of working from home and all of that. But you typically all stand up, the team, and each person briefly goes through yesterday, this is what I worked on. These are the things that are blockers. In other words, I'm stuck at this because of this, that. And then that brief meeting whereby everyone says what they're doing. And then after that, then the work itself. So in terms of the work, there are two main things that you'd be working on. You would either be working on new features, which I think we explained earlier on, is basically a new thing that the software is able to do. New features for either an existing app or a new app that your organization is developing. Or you'll be doing this thing that is called dealing with bugs, fixing bugs. A bug in software lingo is basically any fault in a software application. For example, if you open whatever application, you're expecting that when I'm clicking a certain button, something to happen, but then nothing happens. That's what a bug is called. So as a developer, if you're not working on new features, you would then be dealing with fixing bugs that will either be reported by your customers, the people who use your app, or they may be found internally and reported, and then you would be working on those. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much it. And then, of course, there's a bunch of meetings. For example, if there's new, maybe let's say weekly meetings or bi-weekly meetings or meetings that happen once in every 2 weeks, whereby, let's say, you are now about to embark on the next phase of your software. So you need to have a planning meeting whereby you need to plan exactly what is it exactly that we are going to work on for the next month or 2 months or whatever the case may be. So, but in a nutshell, that's what the a day of a software developer, roughly speaking, looks like.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Now, I know perhaps it depends on the app that you're working at and all those sort of stuff, but on average, how long does it take to develop an app?
Yeah, it will depend on a number of things, as you said. So, for example, here are the things that will determine it. Number one, how familiar are you with the programming language that you are using?
Okay.
So, by the way, there are various things. So, there are these things called programming languages.
Okay.
That you use to create applications. They have their advantages and disadvantages. They have some similarities, but they are not all exactly the same. So, for example, you are starting at a new company. If that company, they are using a programming language that's different to the ones that you're familiar with, it will take you slightly longer because you need to spend some of the time learning the new programming language. If you are dealing with a domain, now a domain basically is that specific, it's a specific business, let's say, solution that that particular organization is working on. For example, you could either be, it's basically the sector or the industry. So you could either be in the, let's say, engineering industry, or you could be, let's say, in the finance, you are working for a bank, or you could be working for whatever. So if you are familiar with that particular industry, it'll be easier for you to understand exactly what the requirements are, and as a result, you work more quicker on the features that you are working on. And then, of course, finally, each specific feature, the complexity will also be determined by the specific feature that you are working on. If, for example, I'm working on an application. The new feature is that when I click a button, it should have a sound that says "hello." That feature will probably take like a couple of hours to a day, for example.
Okay.
But if you're working on a new feature that says that, let's say that I get hired by the conference or the SID or whoever in the search, then they come and say, "Hey Zooks, we would like to have you to develop an application that you open a hymnal, and then our hymnals that have that the music sheet on them, open a hymnal, and then the camera should show up in the app, and then you should be able to make a snippet of that hymnal. It should then be able to read those music notation and then play the song based on those music notations." A feature like that, as you can hear when I'm describing it, it's quite involved. So that one would probably take a couple of weeks to a couple of months. So it depends. It depends on a permutation of all of these various things that I touched on.
Sure. That's beautiful. Now, I wanted us to look at what software engineering and its impact in our lives broadly. But I wanted us to start then in a business, right? What is the role of software engineers? So, in other words, do I need a software engineer, or in what instances would I need a software engineer? I'm sitting and I'm listening right now. I have a business, and I'm like, okay. Yeah, because traditionally, you've got your accountant, you've got your marketing people, you've got your HR that will help you with, hiring and all. Do I need a software engineer?
Most definitely. I think any. I can't think of a single business that would not need a software engineer. You could, of course, you have options. You could either have one that's permanently employed in your organization, or you could actually be dealing with like a contractor who would come in for a specific task and then they would leave. And then, of course, maybe you can have a contract with them that should you kind of like need a little bit of extra work, then they can come in for that set amount of time and then go. So they're not like in a retainer, but you always need them. For example, any business, I can't think of a single business where you wouldn't have a website. I can't think. You need to have a website nowadays, if you have any form of like a respectable business. Then on top of that, of course, you would have your accountants and all of these things, but you may find that some of the things that you would traditionally rely on people, there may be software out there that already can do that.
Okay.
That you can leverage, or you could, in some cases, bring someone in specifically to develop a unique thing that is specifically fit for you, for your business, or for your business needs, basically. And people who do not, who are unable to quickly recognize the need to an extent, at any given point in time, you do need to have a technological eye about you. It's one of the areas that can cause you to end up being outshined by your competition. Because anything that can effectively, let's say, aspects of your business that are manual to whatever extent, that could be automated, that's a software developer. So if you, in your business, do not sit down and think about what are the things that we are currently doing that maybe we do not have to do manually. For example, maybe we do not need to send out these particular emails manually every month to our clients. Maybe this is something that could be automated. And every month, these reports, they just run, and then they just send out emails to our clients. And that's human error eliminated, because when you automate something, there are less chances of a human making an error. And on top of that, if your let's say your competitors are not doing this sort of like automations, then you would have a time advantage over them, and et cetera, et cetera. So definitely, in your business, I'd say it's worthwhile evaluating to see if there are no areas that you could potentially leverage software for. And I can almost guarantee you that they are. A person may not be aware of it, but they are almost always there.
That's beautiful. I'm actually now thinking, as you're saying this, that I am pretty sure that these SMSs that we get from these insurers, hi, Tapelo, such and such an insurer would like to give you a quote on your what. Clearly, they send that to either millions, and so there's a coding that then they use that differentiates Tapelo, Zugi, Sbongi, and all that. There's a coding behind it, because then doing it manually for a million people is impossible.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good example. So most of these marketing campaigns, whether it's by email or by SMS, it's automated to a great extent. So what would maybe typically happen, one of two things would happen, is that they would either, these naughty people that go around giving our company.
Very naughty.
And then there are these databases whereby they pay for, and then they get access to these databases. And then so they source all of the information, and then they shove it into their database. And then, of course, probably next to your information, they have like a couple of details about you, maybe your age, where you reside, and all of those things. So then these softwares, for simplicity to say, they're able to say, okay, for this particular campaign, we would like to target all people within this age range who reside in this area and who are like this and like this. And then they simply say, okay, and we want this particular campaign to run at this time. And then they schedule it, and then they're done. The software takes care of the rest, going in the database, filtering out these people, and then sending out the SMSs with no human being. Actually, and then you feel special, like, oh, they know my number. they wrote me an SMS specially. No, it was sent by a machine.
I
didn't care about you.
Now I need to ask this one, because I think I've always wanted to ask this one. There are certain websites where you are asked, "Are you not a robot?" And some people have argued, this robot is asking me if I'm not a robot. What's happening there?
So typically, right, the reason why you find websites that are doing that, capture, I think that's what those things are called.
Okay.
What typically happens, right, is that in as much as they are software developer, in any area of life, right, we know that there's good and evil people, basically. In as much as, when you say about software developers, not all software developers are good. Software developers, let's say the good ones, the average one, and then there are bad ones, which are typically called hackers.
Okay.
Right? I'm sure maybe people have heard that name. And what hackers do is that they try to gain access that they are not supposed to have mm-hmm. into other people's applications or systems,
mm.
right? So when you then build your system, you want to ensure that no hacker can be able to abuse your system.
Mm.
So for example, this is why then you find that when you are going to go and log in, one of the checks that are put in place is this thing that checks, are you a human?
Yeah.
Because it's difficult for let me complete it by saying that without those things,
mm.
I could sit down, like, let's say I'm a hacker, and mm. then there's this website that I'd like to do some mischievous thing.
Mm.
Then I'm like, I'd like to be able to log into this system that I'm not supposed to log in.
Mm.
I want to try a variety of usernames and passwords,
mm.
but I'm not going to type a username and the password manually because that's going to take forever.
Mm.
So I'm going to write a program or a script that is going to be able to quickly generate hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, mm. hundreds of thousands of usernames and passwords
mm.
and try them on this system in a matter of minutes.
Mm.
Right? And then I run that script and then I go and I'm eating lunch while I'm busy doing that. The software that I've written is busy trying to hack or access illegally someone else's software.
Mm. Mm.
So as one of the ways that people mitigate this, that's why you then see those things. Because without you clicking on that thing, which is difficult for a software or script that is written maliciously to be able to do that thing, an actual person needs to do that action. So it's an extra safe measure to ensure that the person interacting with your software is an actual person as opposed to a malicious program that was written in order to automate an attempt to hack into the system. In a nutshell, I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. It does. Just that it is always odd when this thing asks me, am I a human? I'm like, how? You're not a human yourself, so you know, how do you ask me if I am a human or not? Okay, let's look at it broadly then. So now we understand from a business point of view, so I do need a software engineering team that can help me with that. And of course, as I grow in a world where applications are seriously becoming very important, maybe I need an app for my business as well, so that people can just click, place orders without, you know, coming to the physical store and all those sort of stuff. And I'm thinking now about 60/60, for instance, and all those sort of, you know, offerings that make it, you know, through apps, it makes it easier for us to, I suppose, transact and all those sort of stuff. Now, generally in the world, do we need software engineers?
Yeah, of course. In as I said earlier, right? Every area of our life involves, currently speaking, involves software, and it's only going to get more like that instead of less.
Mm.
So, if anything, the need for software engineers, I can guarantee you right now. For example, I know within the context because I recently changed jobs. I think about 3 months ago.
Mm.
So I know this even from personal experience that at any given point in time, software engineers are always needed by companies.
Mm.
So to make an example, you know, when COVID hit, I think you mentioned during your introduction, it was one of those things that actually showed the advantages of having software.
Mm.
The school, you know, we live, unfortunately, within the context of South Africa, whereby we know that there's a very broad spectrum in terms of, like, the economic setup. Not everyone is well off, and that, by extension, will go to your schools.
Mm.
But the schools that were technologically savvy or were able, you would find that they, even during the lockdowns, including that, if you remember that very first lockdown, that level 5 one, that was hectic.
Yeah.
While other students or children all around the country were unable to study, these schools were able to continue giving lessons to their students because of software, because these applications that we use, like your Zooms and your earlier predecessor like Skype and all of these things, all of those things are software. And the ability, for example, maybe the school having a website whereby the students can go and then submit their assignments and all of those things. So schools that have those things set up or they were able to quickly act and have hire software developers to quickly set those things off, their students were better off than the unfortunate less privileged. So that's cool. Those are schools, right? Which I think may be one of the industries that a person wouldn't off the top of their mind think that's a sector that needs a lot of programming. So the same thing applies in every other industry. From the perspective of communication, or being able to take away anything that does not necessarily need human intervention and delegate it to a software that is then able to do it much faster than your humans and with less error, because computers, when once they're programmed once, they will not make mistakes. Unlike a human being who's going to get fatigued and start making mistakes. Of course, we do know then that there's then the moral question, which I suppose probably out of the scope of this particular meeting of, hey, we need to be careful now to not end up writing so much software that we end up getting people out of jobs, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of like another conversation to have in terms of like, okay, what happens? How do you safeguard or ensure that as we become more technologically advanced and jobs are being replaced, how do we then counter that to ensure that we don't end up increasing unemployment? And that's kind of like another conversation with its own scope.
Yeah, definitely. So as a last one of the parting shots, what would you say are some of your successes so far in the industry?
So I'll speak specifically, since this is a seventh day, I'll speak specifically in terms of like a few things that I've done within the context of being an Adventist. I created, with the help of a group of I think there were like five guys, the first author hymnal. It wasn't in existence, I think, about 9 years ago. And I went looking for it, couldn't find it. And then I came up with a couple of people. I was like, okay, let's type out this hymnal, make it digital. And then after that, I then created the application. In fact, even the one that exists, there's a more famous one, I think a more broadly used application called Christ in Song, created by a guy called Nashon, whole stage. And I'm not sure if it's still in Cape Town. The Xhosa hymnal that's used there, it uses the same digital work that I and that group of like five our Facebook friends we worked on. So I think that's probably one of the most successful things that I've done in software development. And then another project that I'm currently working on, that I'm working on, in fact, it's live actually, is I created this application that allows you to find an SDA church that's near you and basically shows you like SDA churches that are.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But my sort of like long-term goal with that is that I want, as the next step of next phase of development, is that I want to see if I can't convince the conference to adopt the application as one of the conference, that is the Cape Conference, because I'm in the Cape Conference, as one of the conference projects, because through that I would then be able to, or me and whoever would be working on the project in the context of the conference, would be able to fill in most of the churches and ensure that it's something that can be used initially in Southern Africa, and if that works well, hey, who knows? We continue going up the higher bodies in the SDA structure all the way to the GC. Up until we have one application that has a consolidated, you can pretty much be able to locate any church in the world. That's kind of like the long-term goal. But I'd say those are the applications that I'd say are my few successes in terms of things that I've done in the context of the SDA church.
Sure. That's beautiful. I think a lot of us have actually benefited from that application, because we've got that Christ in Song in our, phones and tablets and all those sort of stuff. So really, really great work there that you've done. And I pray and hope that the Lord will continue to bless you as you do that work as well, making it very, very easy for us to, you know, have these songs and Bibles and everything closer to us, because we apparently we touch our phones a lot every single day. So to have these closer to us is something that we really appreciate. Out of time, in 10 seconds or less, any last words to our listeners?
So my last words, I'd say, look, software engineering is an awesome career, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. In fact, it's going to continue being more and more in demand as more industries adopt software as part of their strategy. And I always advise anyone who is not settled on a life calling.